Yeah, you want to test yourself?
Yeah, I'll test myself. Ba-da-ba-do-ba-bop. It's pretty good.
Hey, welcome to episode 169 of Front Seat Gamer. No jokes about that. I'm here with Blake. I'm here with Paul. How you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, good.
Great.
What's that episode number again?
169.
Oh, okay. 169.
Yeah, 169.
Nate.
Yeah, it's like 69, but there's 100 in front.
There's 169.
Well, it also means there's only one of them.
Huh?
There's only one of them.
Yeah. Well, the total number is 169.
169, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just 169.
You're
listening to 169.
I can handle that math.
Right now. Yeah. So technically, yeah. Can't handle 100.
two 69s and some remainders inside of that number.
We'll get to 269, I'm sure.
Yeah, it'll. I mean, our current rate, it'll take about 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
So look forward to that. You guys got games you play with hands?
Yep. With hands, yep.
Yeah, I've been playing games with hands.
That's good. Brain.
Great.
Help. Yeah. Let's talk about them. What do you got?
Well, I've been playing, so Starfield came out,
mm-hmm.
And I've not been playing that.
Perfect.
Instead, uh-huh. I've watched a few videos of it and thought, you know what? This game looks a lot like No Man's Sky.
Uh-huh.
And so I started playing No Man's Sky again.
Oh, no. You thought this isn't early access enough for me.
No, No Man's Sky is far from early access. It's been out for seven years.
But Starfield, you said, oh, this game has come out. I'm not interested.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I'm really into Star Citizen.
If they had a beta, you'd be all over that.
Well, actually, I think if you bought that game, like paid for like some deluxe edition, you did get it early.
Yeah, but you that's not how you operate. You pay a little bit less than the full retail price.
Yeah.
Like a year or two or forever or in advance.
More, yeah.
And you play it in its worst state.
And then you decide, I don't want to, I've had enough, I get that game.
Yeah. Let's find another one to roll into.
Yeah, and then another will take my attention.
How many of them do you go back to like you have with No Man's Sky?
Look, No Man's Sky was never early access.
Yeah.
It was early access when it released. Yeah. I pre-ordered No Man's Sky, and I remember very well.
It felt early access.
It felt very early access.
Well, it doesn't feel early access anymore, and it hasn't for a long time. No Man's Sky is great, but they've been doing it for a little while now, but they have basically a version of our leagues that are
you
start up a new game and you select this expedition mode and you start off in a different situation than normal. So I started off in a freighter and every player starts off in the same place. So every player starts off like in this freighter with solar system, and you have like a bunch of like expedition milestones to hit, which some of them you just naturally do from playing the game, but others are like you have to actually like go out and like specifically try to achieve them.
So they create a new starting point for you.
Yep.
Essentially, everyone's starting from the base, the same spot.
Everyone's starting from the same spot, and you have more stuff than you would normally in the starting game. Because you've played No Man's Sky in that early like hour, haven't you?
No,
really, nothing I've like said over the years has enticed you to play it.
All the times you're kept talking about how like I wish you could do this and I wish this was better, and somehow that never.
No, man,
I think probably it would appeal, but then it's essentially a survival game, right?
Yeah, it is essentially a survival game.
Mm.
Oh, I cannot. I've tried so many times to get like into survival, and I just can't. I hit a point when you're self-sufficient.
Yeah.
The game,
like you can hit that point, I suppose, but it takes a long, long time to get there, and there's always like it is a game that I guess it is like survival where you do set your own goals kind of thing. Mm. But in this mode, you have very clear goals. And mm-hmm. it's a you're traveling along. A set path is already laid out for you. You have to meet up at a bunch of, what are they called? Rendezvous points.
Okay.
Which are systems that are like ages away. So everyone is kind of traveling along the same path.
I was going to ask, is everyone playing on the same seed?
Everyone's playing on the same seed.
And it's actually curated to be that story.
Yeah. And the first system you pop into, all the stuff says like discovered by Hello Games, right? So it's been like crafted basically for this. And then out from there, it's just like everyone basically follows this same path along these rendezvous points. And there's like, you can just go straight there kind of thing, but I've started like branching off into different systems because I'm looking for like specific things to hit these like milestones.
Yep.
And every milestone you get a reward for it. And it basically is a reward that just helps you. It'll give you like more upgrades, more abilities to like build things instead of like, In the normal game, you have to research those things, and you have to it takes a long time to get some of those things. These are just like, oh, you did this thing here. Here's a reward that is like a major kind of like tech upgrade kind of thing.
Mm. Is there still a finish state to it?
There is an end goal, which is when you hit the end of this like. That you reach the final rendezvous point and you've hit all the milestones for each sort of phase.
Yep.
So there's like, I think there's like five phases and each one has like six milestones, which are just, some of them are like build a base, some of them are like land on a planet, some of them are just harvest this thing. Scan a creature with this kind of stats, that sort of stuff.
Yep.
So I'm going through like doing all these milestones, getting the rewards for them. At the end, I don't know what you get at the end, but I do know that in your main game, if you like your rewards transfer over into being able to buy specific unique items from like a vendor. So in my main game, once I finish this, I'll have access to
you get like rewards for the time you put into the other thing.
Yeah.
So I have a question.
Yep.
One of the sort of key defining characteristics of a PoE League is not just the like server reset, it's the new gameplay mechanic,
mm-hmm.
right? What you described is essentially a curated progression path.
Mm-hmm.
Do they actually introduce new mechanics?
No.
So it's more just like we've put a lot of work into this procedural generation and we now realize no one's going to see any of it unless we force them to.
And here's a more curated thing. Yeah. It is pretty much that. And like here's a bunch of like cool rewards and cosmetic stuff and that sort of stuff for your main game
But your main game, do you think you'll feel compelled to return to that after you do one of these leagues?
Because this is a very non-permanent thing. I'm not as invested in doing things like building bases and that sort of stuff. And the funny thing is I've seen a bunch of bases because everyone starts in the same place. You just see people's bases all over the place.
Mm.
And some people have built like amazing stuff that I don't know what's going to happen to it once the end of this expedition is, because it's a timed event.
Yeah. It does go away, right?
Maybe. Fine. Yeah.
I mean, it's like a PoE league. You make your hideout. Your hideout might migrate over to standard, but here's the reason I ask about like whether or not you'd go back to your main game is like I view it through the PoE lens and very few players go and play standard.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe I'll just do the next expedition after that, you know. I don't know, but it's I'm like enjoying it because it really does have that, like I always said, right, that in No Man's Sky you had to kind of make your own goals, like there was the goal of getting to the center, but really who cares?
Well put.
Yeah. And in my main game I am trying to get to the center because I know that there's a lot of player like settlements and stuff in around the center. Like you can go online and actually find like the star map that shows like major like player hubs, and a lot of them around the center. And I basically just want to head there. For the
fixed seed that everyone's playing on? Okay.
Yeah. Well, for the actual main, for the main game.
Is it the same seed as the main game? Because now I'm starting to remember, it's not like everyone has essentially the same seed. It's just procedurally generated universe, right?
Yeah. I think, I don't know, because you could just...
I'm very curious.
Yeah, I don't know. I assumed it was like a brand new seed, but it was just everybody has the same one. So if you load up that save in,
but then how could there be player settlements in the middle?
No. This is I'm talking about in my main game, which is still the same seed. I'm saying that the expedition is another seed that is fresh for with this curated thing. Yeah.
Interesting. Now, you're playing this instead of Starfield.
Yeah.
Why?
Because I looked at Starfield and I was like, there's some similarities there. And it has a lot of things that I just liked about No Man's Sky, where you just land on a planet and explore. And I could see that in Starfield. You land on a planet and you look out and you're like, look at this like world to explore. But I've not heard amazing things about Starfield. So I've decided to...
It seems like the initial consensus was like boo, game bad, because people came at it with certain expectations, and then about a week later it was like, yay, game great.
Oh, okay.
Because people who were playing the game started to surface.
Oh, that's good.
Whether or not I haven't played it. Paul, have you played it?
No,
you have any interest in it?
Nah, not really. I watched a few of the early videos where people were highlighting some of the problems or some of the things they didn't like about it, and it put me off.
I have not been that interested in it, mostly because I saw gameplay.
Cool. I mean, gameplay?
One of their like first like gameplay demos was like them landing base and then going inside and shooting a bunch of dudes. See? And the shooting just did not look fun.
Yeah, sure.
And then, like, I don't care about building a ship.
Mm.
It had like the same kind of. It looked like slightly souped up Oblivion in terms of like animations and graphically. Obviously, it's all built on the same stuff.
Yeah, it is. So, it's still the same engine that they've used since Morrowind.
Gamebryo or whatever, right? Yeah,
so built on that. It's that at its core, it's Gamebryo.
And so it feels like it's falling behind the curve.
Mm-hmm.
They've been working on this game for a really long time. And then it doesn't have the world building inherent in like Elder Scrolls games, where it's got at this point we're 5 Elder Scrolls games deep, so there's decades of lore that's built upon itself. There's all these like interesting characters. I think I generally prefer a fantasy setting over a sci-fi setting for role playing anyway, because
I tend to agree. I think.
And I don't really know why that is now that I think about it.
I could go with either. I've enjoyed quite a few. Well, what's the big MMO one? Sci-fi.
Destiny?
Yeah. I played a bunch of Destiny 2, and I liked the environment. I do quite like the idea of sci-fi.
But Destiny's more... I mean, I haven't played Destiny, so...
I haven't in actually quite a while either. But
It's more MMO than... RPG, when I think about like Elder Scrolls, I'm creating a character, I'm playing through a particular play style, I'm making decisions that impact the world permanently.
Mm.
And I think one of the issues with sci-fi is technology feels too loosey-goosey in a way. They swap magic with technology.
Yeah,
but it doesn't feel. That's cool.
I mean, all sci-fi's run into this, right? Even Star Trek, where they like reverse the polarity of the ion thrust or something, and you're like, what does that even mean? I don't know. They're just doing it. Like, it doesn't mean anything.
Magic, at least, you kind of it branches out into questions like, what are the implications of this in the world? Whereas technology is like, everybody has access to this, I guess. It's just kind of like.
Well, we've talked about magic systems being like hard and loose, right?
Yeah.
I think, where it's like Harry Potter is the loosest magic of them all, where it's just, you just say some stuff and some stuff happens.
I mean, D&D is pretty dang loose as well. So, having played some Baldur's Gate,
you
can get away with night.
D&D, I've always wondered in the D&D world, how come everyone doesn't have magic? Why are they just like, why are you a peasant?
There is lore around that.
Is there?
So you should play more Baldur's Gate.
Oh, what?
So there's a thing called the Weave, and I don't know when.
I know the Weave.
Yeah, so certain characters are in contact with the Weave and the god of the Weave, Mistra, and like this.
Aren't wizards just educated? Like, isn't some that, of them? Aren't they just them, educated into learning it? Like, that's how I thought. I mean, I don't know. I've not read.
It's a bit of both. Like, there are like prodigies who just are attuned to the Weave and like, and then they become educated because they're naturally good at it.
Mm.
And then there's people who really try hard at it and they can get some of the way there. Mm. That's just in the lore anyway.
Yeah. I get it.
But and then part of that is like, as a tabletop game, you can build that backstory yourself. Yeah. Are you naturally talented with it at it? Or you trained for years?
Yeah.
So I think because of the nature of D&D as a storytelling tool, it's very loosey-goosey with the magic as a system. Which is also fine.
Yeah.
I mean, much prefer a loosey-goosey magic system than a loosey-goosey tech system,
I think.
Mm. Because I feel like there's a lot of internal inconsistencies
with
technology as a replacement.
Mm. A lot of sci-fi ends up... all the popular sci-fi, a lot of it ends up like Star Wars, Star Trek, they all are very loose with tech.
Yeah.
I mean, a Star Wars especially.
I think about...
Can we just give a shout out to The Expanse for being like...
I was thinking of The Expanse. It's the one that's not.
to my dad, who's probably listening, I'm very sorry. I still need to watch it.
Oh, man. You should just read the books. They're so good.
Yeah, they really are.
Or just listen to the books. They're so good.
Who has time?
Just put them in.
It's pretty easy to find time for audiobooks, right?
I guess if I'm not working on anything with language involved,
which is
rare.
You have the like. I don't know. You probably do as well, Paul. Like, you have a job that you can just like listen to stuff and not.
I can't listen to audiobooks while working because like writing code, it just ends up like too distracting.
Yeah.
But I will listen to audiobooks like while cleaning.
Yep.
Walking here, I was listening to a book, and just whenever I have time where I'm not really, I don't need to focus on what I'm doing really. Chuck on an audiobook. I also walk a lot.
That's good.
So it's a good way.
Here we go, bragging about your walking again. Get it? You're in great shape. Whatever, Paul.
I'm not really. That's why I'm walking more.
You've been playing. Oh, did you want to talk about?
Not really. I just wanted to, basically just talk about that.
The fact that you're not playing Starfield.
In fact, I'm not playing Starfield. And the fact that, like, these timed expedition events are, like, really fun.
Mm.
It's what's really fun is seeing other players, because that's a rarity normally in the normal game.
Mm-hmm. It's
so few and far between. Like, I've seen probably out in the actual wild, like, one person. And there is a hub town that you can go to and you just see people all over the place and you're like, oh, that's neat. But out in the wild, it's like, I don't think I've ever stumbled across another player's base. I think I've only ever seen one player like once in the actual main game. And in this, there's just like, you just see players all over the place. Their bases are just everywhere. And like this expedition path this route that you're following, the game will... give you like waypoints, basically the fastest route. And that's fine if you just want to get there. But if you want to go off to the sides to other systems because you're looking for specific things and you want to do specific stuff, you can just do that. And I've gone off the path like what I thought was a fair amount, and there's still player bases like everywhere. And like I've not.
That is a cool way to do that.
Interact with them?
Yeah, you can walk into them and like interact with all their stuff that's there.
Does that mean there's a lot more scarcity for the resources, or are those sort of...
Not really. There's so many resources. Like, I don't think that scarcity is scarcity in that game has never been a problem.
I remember when they introduced multiplayer, it was like you could see other players, and that was the extent of it.
Yeah.
You couldn't really interact with them.
Well, when they, well, I mean, you can't, well, actually, you can interact with them because when you go to transfer items from your ship to your, you know, or to your freighter or whatever, it will pop up. If there are other people, players in your system, they're like a link to their inventory will pop up, so you can transfer them stuff, but you have to be within range. Like, it literally just comes up and it's grayed out that, like, this person is not within range. So you could just, like, you can transfer stuff between. I've not interacted with a person, like, other than just, like, walking by and waving.
I'm sure that there are people who will email and say, well, you big dumb idiots, here, you obviously you can do all these things, but I'm very curious what the balance of that,
like, there is PvP,
okay,
which I've specifically turned off.
Okay.
Because I don't want to get shot by
You just want to be near other players.
Yeah, I don't want to. Yeah, yeah. Well, also I turned that off on the recommendation of a YouTube channel I watched. Because I looked into, I wanted to see what these expeditions were like. So I watched a bit of a YouTube channel talking about them. And they were suggesting, look, if this is like your first kind of time doing it, you might want to turn PvP off because... in the past, players have camped the starting location.
Of course. PvP in survival games is always the worst version of PvP.
Have you ever played Rust?
I didn't play much Rust, but I played a bunch of that Ark game
with the dinosaurs. That's just as bad. Yeah,
and, oh, man, you'd like log out and come back in and things would be broken. Yeah. And...
oh, my God.
Yeah. I played V-Rising. Timed PvP in that game, as I understand it. Like, there are specific time windows of time on specific days where PvP is essentially enabled, or at least, like, castle warfare is enabled. And even that does not really interest me.
Yeah. Like,
I don't want to worry about other players wrecking my stuff.
No, because it's like all the game is building stuff and collecting stuff, and you put so much time into it.
The time investment is asymmetrical, completely asymmetrical. It's like 200 hours to build your castle, 15 minutes to knock it down.
Yeah.
Sorry, go start a new server. Bye. It's like, oh boy.
There was I think on Ark, I might be wrong about this, but I'm sure on Ark there was server settings where you could have, like, if you had logged off, your building is indestructible for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, there was something like that, but the game wasn't solid enough to properly protect things, from what I remember anyway.
Yeah. It was fun when players were offline because me and my friends would raid.
not want to play PvP.
Yeah. We had a great time. We fully raided this guy and, like, had a caravan of dinosaurs going back and forth, just taking like packs and packs of their stuff. And then the same thing happened to us, and we were like, well, you know, what goes around comes around.
V-Rising has a timed thing where, if you wait too long, your castle falls apart, right?
Oh, okay.
Because you have to keep it charged with blood.
Yeah.
And if you don't, it just, like, breaks.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll stumble across, like, someone who got, like, very far in the game.
Oh, yeah.
And then just bailed. And everything's for the day.
I like that, though, because it feels like you're coming across a ruined, like, an actual ruin in real life.
I wish it felt like that. What it actually feels like is a bunch of chests. it's just a bunch of chests and a bunch of stuff on the ground.
I remember playing Ark, and we joined a server. I don't know how long it had been running, quite a while, I guess, but there were definitely, like, half-ruined bases all over the place, and you'd just be going along, and you'd feel like you've stumbled into, like, some ruin, and then you'd go in there and, like, maybe you'd find something that's not been looted. I really like that feeling.
It makes me want a survival game that had fairly quick turnarounds on server resets, where the existing state of the server at the end of the last reset became the ruins for the next reset.
That's a cool idea.
Like, essentially, you are building a dungeon for the future.
Yeah. That would be cool.
Really cool. Yeah. Because as Blake was talking about the going through the ruins thing, it's like, it's a shame no one sets their base up with, like, caverns and things, and hidden things and secrets. Yeah. And, like, why would you do that? Unless you had that sort of setup where you knew there was going to be a reset coming and you were leaving something.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool. Especially because if it's like, you know, this exists for the first player to find it on the server, you're building that with defenses, because you want to be the first person
yeah,
to get
yeah,
there.
Yeah, of course.
And then you want to be able to know where those defenses are. And yeah. I think that would be a really interesting dynamic.
Oh, I love that.
Don't steal it. It's my idea. Copyright. Copyright my idea. Paul, you've been playing PoE.
Yeah, I've been playing PoE again.
How's that?
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it a lot.
What character are you playing?
So you know how last time I was playing Summon Raging Spirits?
Yeah.
Doing that again. I'm not really, like, I don't like doing the whole, like, find whatever the meta build is and, yeah. and...
You found your meta build.
Yeah. And you like and it. I just keep playing it, and I have a lot of fun, so...
Do you change it up at all? Like, do you do yeah. anything interesting to differentiate from the last build?
Yeah, so this time, the ascendancy I'm playing is Guardian, and there were big changes to, like, how Guardian works in general. Mm-hmm. So I had to change some things. And it's kind of, once you, if you play the same build every league, you need to change things based off what you find and what you can do. Because I also play on console, which has a way, way smaller economy.
And Summoning Rage Spirits is much better on console than some other builds, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons I play it is because I don't have to focus too much on targeting.
Yeah.
Although a lot of the targeting stuff is fine. Like I'm playing with Stacy, who's playing Lightning Arrow, and she's just shooting arrows everywhere at this point. So,
but I imagine like Flame Blast, for example, or
yeah, I wouldn't want to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what's your twist this season? What gear? Like what's your build defining unique at the moment?
There isn't really a build. The build defining unique is kind of the same one as last time because there's a chess piece that gives your minions chaos resistance, and while they have that gives them energy shield, and while they have energy shield, they ignore enemies' elemental resistances, which is just very strong. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you run all of the auras, I assume.
So this is one of the things with the Guardian change is that when your minions or a party member attacks or kills, I can't remember the specifics, enemies, it summons these sentinels, and there's three of them that you can get.
Yeah.
Each hit has a chance to summon one of them, and they are level 27 auras.
Oh!
So it's like, so they're 27 because you can't scale them any other way.
Yeah.
Right? Like you can't run any of the blessings or anything to like, and you can't scale through any aura increase.
Yeah.
So they're level 27 to compensate for some of that.
Okay.
But yeah, it's fantastic.
I mean, level scaling is like one of the best ways to increase those anyway. So
yeah.
Then are you also running any auras on yourself?
Yeah, but just really defensive ones. Haste or determination for armor and haste.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Sounds like a fun build.
It's very fun. It's nowhere near the amount of damage you get out of some other builds and stuff, but it's very tanky and it's fun to play.
Very safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. That's how you succeed in PoE, in my experience, is you play safe.
Yep. Because if you're dying all the time, it just gets frustrating.
Yes. And you, why do you play on console as opposed to PC?
Because I work at a PC all day.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I relax as much when I'm playing games on PC.
Yeah, you want to hunch in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I want to lie down and wiggle only my thumbs.
You want to slouch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to balance it up.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
I've done my upright seating time. Now I want to do lie down seating time.
Of course. That makes a lot of sense to me. Now, I have a question for both of you, and that is, why have neither of you been playing Baldur's Gate 3?
I have been playing Baldur's Gate 3, although I haven't played since last weekend.
Because of No Man's
Sky. Because of No Man's Sky. And
do you regret that decision? Because I think you should.
The problem is, I like both of them.
That is a problem.
Well,
I guess No Man's Sky is a timed event, so I'll let it.
In fact, that's my answer as well. It's that it's a new league, and the league is exciting at the start, whereas Baldur's Gate is going to be the same when I go back to it.
It's true. But
Baldur's Gate, how do you feel about this, Paul? Because I think we talked about this before.
Oh, yeah, we did.
About how when you go to play Baldur's Gate, well, at least for me, when I want to play Baldur's Gate, I feel like I need the entire afternoon or day clear.
Okay.
And I don't want to play it for an hour after work. Mm-hmm. I want to play it for 8 hours after work. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work out on a weekday.
Mm.
But it does work out on the weekend. So I'm kind of thinking Baldur's Gate is my like weekend game. Mm-hmm. And No Man's Sky is my weekday game.
I'm going to throw something out at you, Blake.
Yeah.
I think you've spread yourself too thin with Baldur's Gate. How many games do you have on the go?
Just two.
In Baldur's Gate?
Oh, you mean, right. You mean, three.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the issue, is that it's a weekend game because that's the time you've allotted for your other game.
When I said I played last weekend was like one day was my game. Uh-huh. The second day was our multiplayer game.
Yeah, I feel like that's where you've boxed yourself in a bit.
Yeah.
I reckon you could 2 hours in the evening of Baldur's Gate is great. That's like
I have
a substantial piece of story content.
I have played it after work, but I just it just feels like I want to keep playing it after work.
Yeah, and then the last place I stopped playing, I'm about 2 hours deep into a dungeon.
Mm. Which dungeon?
We talked about it last time.
The goblins.
Nah, it's Shah's something. Shah's
Is it the
temple?
Grimforge? Is that what it's called?
Grim, you both said two different things, and they both exist. So I don't want to get in this because I don't want to spoil for either of you.
It's in the Underdark, right?
Uh-oh.
I don't think so. I think it was after that.
It's after that.
I don't. The thing
what?
Is,
where are you at?
Let me ask you. Is
early
it,
act
is
two.
It through a crypt?
Oh, okay. I'm not there then.
Through a crypt?
Did you go through a mausoleum?
Man, I don't even remember. Oh, so that's the problem is, I was playing this when I had COVID, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
And like, now I've got to...
You're going to go back.
All I remember is I was 2 hours deep in this dungeon I was lost in.
Why was I making these decisions? How did I end up with this?
You need to get COVID again so you remember what
you get
doing.
Back into that state.
That game is fantastic. That's all I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. I am, I would say, fairly deep into Act 3.
Oh, wow.
At this point. And it is... So
I have just popped into Act 2, and it's very unceremonial going between acts.
Yeah. Oh, so actually, you say that.
Yeah.
And I agree to an extent.
Yeah.
But I think you have to view it as, I think what you're picturing is
Diablo style, where it's like here's the act boss,
and then there's a portal at the end you walk through. But when you consider the events that essentially open up the path to the next
act. I get it, but then why even bother having the Steam achievement that says you've done Act 1?
So that you know?
Why not just say you've done... Why not just do that for every map that you're in? Why not be like, hey, congratulations, you did the river.
The goblin camp.
You did the goblin stuff. Yeah. You did the Underdark.
Have some of those things as well, though.
It does, and then it also has... congratulations, you did Act 1.
I'm
I was
never
like,
gonna
did
say
I?
No to more achievements. Like... I mean,
the place that I was down in, there was a like light puzzle at the start.
Light puzzle.
Yeah, with lamps.
I know the one you're talking about.
Yes,
I don't know this. Yes, I don't know this.
Is it Shah's Temple?
Yes.
Is this Act 2 then?
Yes.
Okay.
And you got some fun, interesting stuff.
There's so much going on.
So much going on, and. Who's in your party?
Shadow something.
Shadow Heart.
Astarion.
Okay, yep.
And Gale.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So Shadow Heart, being a cleric of Shar, is having a time in there, I'm sure.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boy, this game is so good.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing it does very well is give you impossible choices. And...
I've had a few of those.
They're all over the place, and they are impressive in their their far-reachingness for the story.
Oh no, there was definitely like a weird one that came up, and I was really conflicted about how to approach it until I was like, you know what, this is my game. I'm gonna just do this, and I'm gonna see.
Blake, cover your ears if you don't know.
Do you want me to walk out of the room?
Yeah, actually, this is now just Paul and I having a conversation.
Should I actually? Because I don't want to get spoiled.
No, we'll have a chat after.
All right. Yeah.
Anyway, that game is so great.
I could talk about a so there was a boss fight that we've all done then. Must have been, because it was in the
on the choices. Go ahead. That's it.
So a little bit of spoiler for a boss fight in in the Underdark. You go to that Grimford place.
Yes.
And there is a if you read a bunch of text, it talks about like a big golem that is like weak to a fiery hammer.
Yep. Yes.
And I was like, okay, so I guess there's going to be a big fire golem or something. And then you encounter this thing. And during the fight, like I was unprepared for that boss fight. I needed a long rest. So I came into it like real, like my sorcerer had like no spell slots left.
Yep.
Everyone was on like half life, quarter life, that kind of thing.
But go on.
And, the whole thing was, I thought that I would at some point find a big fiery hammer that I could use. And then during this whole fight, I'm like, I was damaging it, and then I was not able to damage it anymore. And I was like, what is going on? And I realized that it targets the last thing that damaged it. So I was like, okay, I'll just kite it around and try to figure out what's going on here. And I was like, all right, I like inspected it as well, which like, you know, and it said something.
Getting desperate.
Yeah. And it had a clue of like, it had a clue that like, I can't remember what it said, but it had a clue that if the metal is heated up, it becomes more malleable. And I was like, I'll turn on this lava because the lava was at the start of the fight, and that, and I was like, so that's why I was able to damage it. So okay, cool. So I did that, and then I was like, well, what can I do now? I can't walk in the lava, and I'm just like kiting this thing around because there's these like safe zones that are basically islands in this lava.
Yep.
Then I realized there's a switch off to the side, which I had pulled to begin with, but basically started the boss fight where this big old like slab. Very hammer-like, comes down. I was like, wait a minute. I think I've got it. And like, I figured it out that like, I kited the guy towards the middle, had him like glowing from the lava, and then hit him a few times with this hammer. And it was like the best fight I've ever had because it took me, like figuring it out during the battle. When the battle, I came in unprepared already.
You managed to squeak through, huh?
Yeah, I managed to squeak
through. How did you survive that long? Because he like he hit one of my dudes and it just like killed them.
That's a very hard fight. Congrats.
The last move I did was like I had to use like Misty Step to get over to the switch.
Yeah.
And then like managed to pull it. But I just kept kiting him with like arrows and stuff. I ended up like very quickly realizing melee is not going to do anything.
Yeah.
So I basically disengaged everyone and fled all over the place and just lobbed arrows and whatever at them and to make them walk around. And once I realized that, oh, they just target the thing that hit them last, I was basically maneuvering it. So I'd hit him, his next turn he'd target, and it would be like he wouldn't actually be able to get to that character because he's very slow. And so he'd just walk and then be like, great, cool. And then I'll kite him to somebody else. Like, I just managed to control him enough. You know?
That's
very clever.
Impressive.
Yeah.
I really struggled with trying to get him to stop in the right place. Because I had four dudes like in each corner. And I would try and like bait him towards whatever the furthest one away was.
Yep.
But it was just very hard to coordinate to get him to stop in the right place. And if he didn't, he could usually reach the one of the other people on the next turn.
Oh, yeah.
And aggro would just change and he'd go off there.
There were times when it was like, okay, I've got, it would be like, say, Lazelle, and she does an arrow, and then she's the target. And then other characters are closer to him, but I just didn't do anything. I just skipped their turn.
Yeah.
You know, so the aggro stayed on her, and then he'd walk towards
her. But it fades, right? It fades after a turn, the aggro thing.
I don't know.
I don't remember how it works.
The only time I've seen it not target the thing that that first attacked was that he had he killed the person that aggroed him, and then by his next turn I hadn't aggroed him, so he just targeted the next closest. Or he just started walking. He just started walking towards the next closest.
He has an AoE skill as well.
Yeah. Which,
if your dudes are grouped as bad dudes.
Yeah, But it was also like, I people did go down in it, but I was like constantly trying to get them back up.
Right.
You know?
I just reloaded this last save if someone died.
Yeah. I think I did that fight several times to finally win.
Yeah, it took me a few guys.
And I didn't do what you did.
Yeah.
I just had him stand on the lava and hit him with a hammer myself.
Oh, no.
Oh, really? No, it's well, totally that's what I started doing. Thing.
I was like, this is terrible. I'm not gonna survive this.
You can run the lava repeatedly.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's vulnerable to blunt weapons.
Yeah.
So I just had my two fighters.
Just wail on him?
Wail on him.
Nice.
And I did it in a couple turns.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it was after several attempts. So I think it's really impressive what you did.
Wow.
I had neither the mental wherewithal or the patience to do what you did.
Yeah.
Well,
the first time, it was such a trial and error because when I realized about the hammer, I hadn't realized about the lava.
Mm-hmm.
So I got him in the middle, hit him with the hammer, and it like stunned him for a while. And I was like, okay, maybe I can hit him now.
Still it does like, no damage. When
yeah,
it
still does no damage. And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And that's when I like inspected him, and it says it gives you a clue basically that like
okay.
if it's heated, the metal is like weak.
I ended up going back to, like, in the Underdark. There's like a dude in a camp who's like lost his mind, and he has a clue to how to use the forge there. And he's like trying to write spells, and one of the spells just is going hot hammer, hot hammer, hot hammer.
Yeah,
I went.
I had that written on a piece of paper I found.
That
was after the fact, and I was like, oh no.
Yeah, that's why I thought, oh, at some point I'm gonna find a big great hammer that's like a fiery great hammer.
That's what I was expecting as well.
Which that guy also had a piece of an ice staff.
Oh.
Like. I found two pieces of a weapon in the Underdark. Like it was like ice shaft and ice crystal or something.
Yeah,
like
I found those.
And I could never find the third one. And I'm pretty sure I bugged it out.
Hmm.
So, I think it after doing some Googling, there's a spectator. For legal reasons, we're calling it a spectator, not a beholder.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's actually just a beholder. But, and there's like some dudes turned to stone, right? And I think one of those dudes that are turned to stone might have
a thing.
Well, you got to smash every dude. Or
what
something
I did, I didn't know. I stumbled across this dude who was turned to stone, and I had a basilisk flask.
Oh,
and I was like, oh, I'll just unstone him. And I unstoned him, and then this fight started.
Yeah.
And I beat this guy, and
same thing happened
to me. I ran off.
Yeah. Oh.
Possibly with the staff piece. Oh. So I never got that item.
I might have that staff piece, but not the other two. Because I did have something in my inventory that I was like some sort of ice shard thing that I'm like, this doesn't look like an ingredient for anything.
No.
I don't know what.
But if you click on it, it gives you an option to combine it with two other things.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
There's lots of cool little interactions with that, like that.
Yeah, I found a few things that combined. Nothing super interesting yet, but definitely like new weapons that could have been cool.
I mean, the forge itself is an example of that, right? You put in a mold and some mithril.
You can keep
doing it,
too. I
like the whole process.
It's not just a one-off.
I've only found two pieces of mithril.
Oh, I found like three.
What?
Yeah, I think
there's
I found
like
three as well.
Mithril, mining chunks around the place.
I found one inside of the, like, next to the forge area.
Okay.
And going down through all the fiery stuff.
And then
you find that weird, it's like a ring or something that starts talking to you.
Oh, the amulet?
Oh,
yeah.
Amulet. That tries to make you laugh to death?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, man, there's just so much cool stuff in that. It's just, and here's the thing. Now, this is why I want to talk about Baldur's Gate after talking about Starfield.
Mm-hmm.
Is these are two games with entirely different emphasis on their scope. And it's why it's another reason I'm not that interested in Starfield. With every successive Bethesda game, they try to get larger. And they try to find ways to generate filler content.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Baldur's Gate kind of has done the opposite. Like, that game world feels huge. But when you actually look at the map, it's not big.
Mm.
It's just dense. And but they put so much work into the denseness of it. It's multi-layered, multifaceted, and it makes you want to replay.
Yeah.
The choices matter so much that it feels like a much more enriching experience. And when I look at Starfield, it's like, oh, cool, there's 1,000 planets, and there's probably, you know, there's probably some a good number of dungeons they've made to populate those planets, and you're going to see them over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You're not going to have any control over what dungeons you end up seeing.
So someone was telling me who has been playing it at work that they've landed on, you know, 12 planets and just seen repeated assets constantly.
Yep.
And, like, for that, I mean, surely you'd have more interesting stuff for the, like, 12 planets.
I'd been hearing that, like, in the main quest, that people, as part of the main quest, were seeing repeated dungeons, like, repeated encounters. And that's just, like, a bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of my least favorite things, for sure.
Like, on the main quest, you could at least put some control in there, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's, I just wanted to bring it back to Baldur's Gate because it's sort of the opposite.
They've
taken a completely different approach in terms of scale and scope.
Mm.
They focus on depth as opposed to breadth. And I think that's the better way to go, ultimately.
It really is. It's a game that rewards you a lot for exploration.
Yes.
You know, because you'll find some crazy... You'll find withers. You'll find, like, a crazy artifact. And it rewards you for reading stuff and actually following clues because the quest log doesn't explain things most of the time.
Yeah, it
like the hot hammer thing.
The hot hammer thing.
You know?
Yeah, it harkens back to an earlier Bethesda game, Morrowind, in that sense.
Yeah.
Where you would not make it through that game if you didn't read.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. And that game also had a lot of content, and it was like kind of a large landmass. Mm. It was kind of empty in spots, but it was all... bespoke content. There was no like filler.
Mm. Man, Morrowind. None of their games since Morrowind had that same vibe to me. Like Morrowind, just to me felt it expanded my mind on what a game could be.
Yeah,
and it hit a like exploration itch that I had that I didn't know I had.
Yep.
And like Oblivion didn't. Yeah, and Oblivion didn't do that, and Skyrim didn't do that for me. And I think a huge part of why...
I know why it is.
The fog of war on the map.
Oh, no.
Why? What are you going to say?
Levitation.
Well, I mean, sure. But that's also... I mean, that's...
Like, you make a great point. The fog of war, even though the map doesn't change...
No, but...
It's a visual indicator of your progress.
Yeah, and they say, like, you know, you that first quest that's like, okay, go to this town.
Yeah.
And you look on the map and you're like, I see nothing.
Yeah.
And then you see a signpost that says this town is that
way. Or
and you just, you just start walking. And then you see that Strider thing.
Uh-huh.
And you're, Strider. Yeah. And you're like, oh, what's this thing? And you're like, oh, it's a mass transport system. Yeah. I could use that. I don't have the money. I guess I'll just walk down this road. And you, because of the fog of war and also because of the view distance limitation, you don't know what's ahead of you.
It was so much more alien than any of the Bethesda games that have come after it, including the game that I assume has aliens in it. The fact that there was a Silt Strider as the mass transport and those giant mushroom trees, like everyone speaks, they're calling you Unwa, and like there's just so much. You feel transported in a way that no other game has managed to do because they rely on real world analogs for Oblivion and Skyrim.
Yeah.
How long ago did you play Morrowind?
I probably first played it in like 2005.
I mean,
six.
The most recent time.
It's been a while. I did try to play it again, probably like 4 or 5 years ago, and it was like, this is hard to play.
Yeah.
Because they. Game systems. I think the thing that has fallen behind most in it is game systems and usability. Like menus are like floating windows. they have a whole weird accuracy mechanic. If you haven't turned it off, like the way combat works is the swing type you do is based on the mouse movement you are using.
Oh god, yeah.
Oh right.
Like you have to like do an arcing swing to do a slash and things, which is
shield block was also just by chance.
Yep.
Like, you couldn't just hold your shield up like you can in the other games. It was just like you had a chance to block. And then sometimes your shield would come up and block an attack.
Yeah, and enchanted weapons had, like, specific amount of charge. And then you had to use a soul gem that, like, that got consumed to recharge them. Mm. There's, like, lots of game systems that are pretty archaic by today's standards. But there are still elements of that game's world building. And
I mean, people love it so much.
I was just curious how much of the sort of immersion and exploration side of it held up.
It's a really good question.
Because, just the when it came out, it was obviously, like, insane. I didn't play it that much. I died too much and was just like, I don't understand this game. And because I think I also checked it out in, like, 2005. And I hadn't played anything like it.
I think it's interesting remembering that this is also the sort of the same era as World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
So, like, games had big worlds back then. And they were, there was lots of world building and exploration. I couldn't put any specific reason on why Morrowind held such a grip for me beyond, like, how little it cared about the player's personal experience beyond, like, letting them go and do what they want to do.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a great part of why I'm really enjoying Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, you can totally screw over your playthrough. It'll still work. Like, you might have a good time, or you might not. Like, you may lose all of your playable characters, and it'll still work.
Yeah.
You can completely ignore the quest. I have a really strong feeling that if I were to get off of the Nautiloid and just make a beeline for, like, the mountain pass, I could probably do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the game would still work.
Yeah.
You can literally find the mountain pass before you even go into the goblin camp.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
There's like a
place right next to the
goblin camp. Yeah, right next to the goblin camp, and you can just go through there.
You can just go through the Underdark.
Yeah.
So, like, I suspect there's lots of things that the game will just allow you to do, and you might have a really hard playthrough, and that's fine. Mm. It doesn't treat you like a baby. It doesn't level the characters down in certain areas.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, what I realized when Withers comes to your camp, and he tells you you can hire. He's got hirelings.
Yeah.
That's when I realized, like, oh, you can, like,
kill everybody.
Wreck your game so much that you have to hire these just, like, random NPCs to fill out your party.
Yeah.
Speaking of Withers, do you still have him around?
Yeah. Interesting.
Wait, I'm what? Very curious.
we'll have a chat off after this. I'm very curious.
Speaking of ruining playthroughs.
That's why I think, I can't remember if I said it in the last podcast, but that's why I think the devil guy is, like, your safety net. Like, I just feel like
Lucian.
Raphael. Yeah, Raphael. Yeah. I think that no matter how badly you wreck your game, he's gonna be the one that always will help you in the end in some way.
I will say nothing.
Okay, we'll see.
I really want you guys to play more Baldur's Gate so that I can talk more openly about all of the cool things. And also, listeners, you should do the same so that I don't spoil everything for you. We're almost out of time. I just want to read out some of the comments. These are from a while ago. These are three people who want to know, just want me to talk about Tears of the Kingdom a bunch. If you want me to talk about Tears of the Kingdom, please email us or leave a comment asking specifically, like, what do you want to hear? If there's, like, any feature, because I love talking about Tears of the Kingdom. I beat it. So
we haven't talked about it since.
There was a long time between.
It was a long time between podcasts, so we missed out on a lot of all that time would have otherwise been spent talking about Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, there are some things I don't like about that game, and
I want to hear about that
right now. Because there's not time.
Next podcast. Next podcast. It'll be 10 reasons why Zelda sucks.
If I can come up with 10, that's going to be a surprise. Someone else was asking if they want to hear our thoughts about D4 now that it's out in full and there's a couple seasons announced. I haven't actually played D4.
I haven't played the new season.
I haven't checked out any of the new season. I think I mentioned this last time. I really enjoyed the campaign.
Yeah.
But when it got to endgame, it just got very, very dead very, very fast.
This seems to be like the common thread of what I've heard about that
game. Yeah.
It's and like, the, great campaign, and then I didn't care to play anymore.
Yep. And I tried. None of the I've watched a few I watched one of the preview things for the season. I know they did fix some of the stuff I didn't like, the whole like Altars of Lilith thing. Were just little things you got to go around and find, and that was super tedious.
Yeah.
So I just gave up doing that. I think they got rid of those entirely.
Okay.
But it didn't seem super exciting to me. The one I saw, I can't remember if it was season one or season two, was you kill a rare enemy and then it like resurrects as a stronger rare enemy, and then you get to kill it again for like some kind of reward. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I just so badly don't want to do that.
Why not? You don't want to do the same thing twice in a row?
Well, the rares in that game were like slow to kill anyway, and it wasn't like engaging. It was just, they were quite tanky.
Right, okay. It's not like you're dancing around their skills or anything.
No, it's just, you just rotate cooldowns.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of criticism about the combat system in general as well, just around the use of cooldowns as the limiting factor.
Yeah.
And the reliance on auto attack.
I think just the story though is quite good. There are a couple of weak acts, but I still feel like I got my money out of it.
Yeah,
you know, like I've had a lot of fun playing through the campaign. Nice environments, fun world. Just,
do you think you'd come back in like a year or?
Depends on what they do.
Yeah.
If they overhaul like a bunch of skills and things and have enough depth for me to like actually play around. And I also had the experience of started playing. I figured out a build in closed beta I wanted to play because I had the early access weekend. Mm. Found a build I really liked. On launch, started playing that build. It got super popular because some guy made a video about it like the day before.
Oh, no.
And then a week into the launch, they nerfed it.
Oh man!
What was the build?
It was just a reflect bleed cyclone whirlwind. And I was super surprised in closed beta that like reflect was a viable means of damage.
Mm, that's cool.
I was so excited. No, it came out and then like they just nerfed the shit out of it.
Is reflect? I remember they did like a reflect build in D3, and I remember on POE trying to sort of find a way to make reflect work.
Yeah.
Is it a fun build? Because here's my impression, trying to make something like that work, is it's inherently passive.
So there were a lot of like taunts. So you had to jump right in the middle, just, like, taunt, and then cyclone, and yeah. And they would hit themselves very, very hard.
Sure. But is that more active than using... I mean, I think it's just... It just feels much less active than using the skills themselves. Like, that taunt could be something that stuns or something that deals damage.
It could. I was also playing with Stacey, so the whole... I liked the whole idea of, like, I'm going to be tanking and dealing damage through Reflect while she stands back.
Gotcha. You're thinking about the group.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes
sense. That combination, like, felt like a really fun idea of how to play the game.
But if there wasn't Reflect there?
Then you're just a tank, which, like, sure, but then you're relying on someone else to deal all the damage.
Yeah.
Feels, to me, more passive
interesting.
Than having something where you're, like, doing Reflect and Bleed, and, you know, you've got, like, at least a build around how you're going in tanking.
So I guess in my head, the way I would make that work, I mean, we're out of time at this point, but I would want to build a skill that saved the damage you're taking and dealt it back out. So it was more player engaged.
Yeah, that would be fun too.
Like, you're taunting, you're taking the damage, and it's up to you as to when you and how you release the damage you're absorbing. Because it is essentially Reflect in a more player autonomous way.
Yeah, this was just you'd pick up a bunch of Reflect, and then there was another Warcry you could do that would one of the passives you could allocate would just make them deal crazy damage to themselves.
Yeah.
So then you would just end up instead with just like a cooldown based thing.
Mm.
Whereas actually having it based off how much damage you're taking does sound way more fun.
Cool. All right. Good to know. If I ever have an opportunity to do that. Anyway.
But they're nerf. So is that just not a viable thing anymore? Or is it just what you said, a tank, and now Stacey's doing
it? It was less damage.
Right.
But I just spent like a bunch of time leveling my character based off what I'd seen and planned. And
well, on that note, email frenziedquestions@gmail.com. Tell us your favorite D4 build and also what your favorite moment in Baldur's Gate 3 is. Make sure it's not highlighted as a spoiler and email it directly to Blake.
Oh, my God. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe at the end of the game.
Tell us what you want to hear about Zelda or any other game. We love hearing from you. Mm. So keep it up.
We had lots of great comments on the last episode.
Thank you very much.
So
I had a look at those as well.
Yeah, it's great. Mm. Did you see there was someone who, a fan who was at ExileCon, I noticed them because they're wearing a toucan.
Slippery Jim, right?
Yeah.
Slippery Jim is also you call him just a fan. He's also kind of a legend in the PoE community. He was doing, like, these insane grinding runs. Like, he was doing, like, 5,000 runs of aqueducts and videoing it. And
oh, my God.
This is from years ago. But yeah. He's, like...
Oh, wow.
He is in his own right, a good content creator.
Well, he's awesome. And that toucan hat was awesome.
I missed it.
I pointed him out to someone who was standing next to me, like, oh my God, look at that. It's so awesome. but I wonder if maybe whenever we do the next one, we should actually organize a fan meetup.
Yeah, we did for the
for the first one, but I was just like so swamped with work, I couldn't think of anything else.
We at the time. We had stopped podcasting 2 months prior. Wouldn't be anyway, maybe next time.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. See you in a couple weeks.
Yep.
Probably.
Yep.
Yeah.
Probably.
Bye.
Oh, did you guys see the Unity stuff?
Yeah.
That's so insane. What the fuck are they thinking?
I don't know. They rolled back a lot of the worst of it, but it's still not good.
But why
did they go public with it in the first place?
Like, I don't know.
Like, I don't know how much they rolled back, but
they rolled back the demo stuff, and because before it was like any install, no matter what. So now it's 20 cents per, not per install, but not for demos. It's not paid by the developer if it's an online through like one of the PS Plus or Game Pass things.
Right.
But now it's supposed to be Microsoft that pays or Sony that pays.
Yeah, I saw that they said that they like the three big game publishers had agreed to pay those costs.
Have they agreed?
That's what they said. Okay. But no, none of those three publishers had come out with anything. That's what Unity was saying.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's
like
one of the dumbest things I've seen.
Imagine like PoE was on Unity.
Yeah.
And you loved PoE and they do a bad patch. Mm. And you're pissed off with them.
Mm-hmm.
You can start actively costing the company money by just installing and uninstalling the client. You could build a bot farm that does this and put them out of business.
Yeah.
It's fucking crazy.
I heard for web-based games, like games in Unity that are on a website, that wouldn't have an install, right? But it's... When the game loads on that page, it counts as a charge.
That's insane.
This is also completely working around the fact that... avoiding the fact that they need to track an install somehow.
Yeah.
And that install is going to probably be just some kind of request
to a server
from a client, and you can't hide things in clients. You could just
spoof it.
You can't ever hide things properly in clients. It's just straight up not possible.
So you could just spoof it
to a server.
Holy shit.
So you can
just pack it. Like, just send...
Yeah, just use fucking Wireshark, look at what it's sending, and, like, it surely can't take that long for someone to figure that shit out. People do it for fucking making items in games and shit.
It's like, and they said they're going to do it retroactively. That's, like, the biggest dickhole move of all. It's like...
You can't, like, just not upgrade Unity or whatever. It's... The license just flips over to the new one. On 1st of January.
There was a developer, I don't remember who it was, but there's a developer on Twitter that said that they would owe $5 million to Unity because of that. Which they obviously don't have.
So, Hearthstone's made in Unity.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Wow.
Well, you think about, like, how many fucking installs
that's hundreds of millions. Like, they're probably saying this is our big payday. Here's my prediction. Before that, unless they completely roll back this shit, I predict you will see thousands of games taken off the store so
that
installs cannot continue.
The Cult of the Lamb guy, did you see the tweet?
Yeah, they tweeted that it was not going to be available. They did send a follow-up message in Discord saying that it probably still will be available.
Mm.
But they did say that if it goes ahead, they're going to completely pivot on the next game.
I would imagine almost every studio that is currently developing Unity. It is
the only sensible thing you could do.
Mm. Yeah.
And when the fucking competition is like Unreal.
Yeah.
And Unreal
there's a better engine and they're not doing this?
Yeah.
Whoa, let me think about this.
And Unreal's like bad if you're making like, they're from what I heard anyway, their licenses like suck a bit if you're making shitloads of money.
Mm. Yeah.
But like if you're already making shitloads of money, then who cares? Fucking,
Well, the Unity one is in reverse. If you're not making shitloads of money, but you've got high installs.
Yeah.
That's when you're fucked.
Now, it only kicks in after a certain value, but then it's not restricted to like a portion of the value after that point. Mm. It seems crazy. It just seems like, we're gonna bankrupt a bunch of people. Yeah. Is that cool with you guys?
Mm.
Like, what's interesting too, that you heard the CEO sold a bunch of shares like a few days before this announcement.
Wait, really?
Yeah. This is what I've heard.
A few of the top people have been selling shares. It's all on like Nasdaq.com. Because I saw the post and I was like, surely this could be like some donk.
So is this like a dump and pump?
Is this
the opposite of a pump and dump? Like, where they sell all their shares, then put out a fucking terrible policy, let the price plummet,
and then buy
it back?
I don't know.
And then reverse the policy?
Maybe. What's his name? Like, Riccardo or whatever?
John Riccitiello.
That guy. He sold, in total, not just immediately, recently, but like over the last, I don't remember. It was like $1.8 million worth of shares.
I'd be curious what that is of his total holding. Cause like,
I don't know. Unity does the whole vested shares shit.
Yeah.
You can see what the total is. And that shit is all public as well.
Yeah.
Cause
I can see, that can just be a part of, especially if you're a shareholder in a company, you essentially are required to have scheduled sell-offs. If you're going to sell your shares, they have to be scheduled in advance.
Right.
So, like, it's not suspect until I understand what that is as a proportion of his holdings. And, like, you know, does he cease those sell-offs? Like, those sorts of things are curious. I'd be curious about.
I did find a funny thing about it, too, where there was some indie game. Because it's the same guy that worked for EA when this other indie game was underneath them, and they got screwed so badly, they made him the main antagonist in the following two games.
Oh my god.
Yeah, he's a real piece of shit. he was worse than the current EA CEO, if that gives you any...
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess Activision is the shitty one, Bobby Kotick.
It's nuts.
Really strange.
Also, like, people are learning Unity in schools, right?
Yeah.
It's
like one of the big engines, really. But it is always...
Oh, yeah.
It is often, like, the indie engine.
Mm.
And what's the thing? I remember they were trying to get... I was at IGN when they had just essentially gone public with the engine. Like, they... Not, like, in a shareholder sense.
Yeah.
In, like, we're now going to start pushing this, more broadly, we're going, we they're going to game companies being like, this is, it's now free. Anybody can build things on it. That was when I was at IGN. I remember them coming to the studio or to the offices, and like, that was like a cool thing. And they're like, yeah, we'll have like an asset store where people can like build assets and sell them, and they can actually make money doing this. And it was like, this is cool. This is innovative. You're like opening up development to a bunch of people.
Yep.
This is doing like the
opposite.
It's like
exact opposite.
Oh, you selling assets? No, 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 no. We're gonna take money from your installs.
Yeah.
It's nuts. This is so weird.
The thing I remember too is like back then when you're saying that they were just coming out. I remember. I remember Unreal was like.
You had to pay $1 million for a basic
license. You had to pay for it. It wasn't free. It was also, like, really hard to use. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, like, really just, like, not user-friendly to use.
And there was a lot of drama around... They would hold back major engine updates until their games had come out.
Yeah. And, like, Unity, that's why I basically, the first... Like the first engine I really got into was Unity.
Yeah.
And I just started using that because it was so user-friendly. And it gave Unreal a lot of competition.
Yeah, it created competition. It served them very well as a business, I assume. And it just is, they're shooting themselves in the foot. It's just so strange.
And
What is the end game?
It's like a cash grab.
It feels literally
it's like a cash grab that they're just like, we're just going
to
trash this company for money.
If they are publicly traded... My guess is this is the CEO trying to golden parachute out. Basically saying, I bet I would put money on him having some sort of major bonus deal. That he is like, the company has to reach some revenue within this, if it reaches this revenue within this quarter or whatever, he gets this massive bonus. And he's probably wanting to retire.
And he's just going to basically trash the whole company to get it. Yeah.
And this is ultimately a problem with the way publicly traded companies are assessed as, like, on the market. It is quarterly returns. Or did you beat last quarter? The CEO bonuses are tied to quarterly performance. Is there any sort of incentive to look at long-term success?
Yeah. I hate that thing of you have to constantly do better than last time.
Yeah,
it's not sustainable.
You get this.
It literally is because, how can people not be happy with I don't know what they're making, but you know, for a company, a revenue of $100 million a year, steadily, you know.
Yeah.
How are people not happy with that? But they'll be like, oh, you're a failure because you made $100 million last year and you. Only made it $100 million this year.
You're only beating inflation or slightly beating it, not extremely beating it.
You're not. Yeah, it's
like from a rational investor perspective, I understand that the goal is to make the most money as quickly as possible. I get that, but it is destructive for the actual companies.
Yeah, it really is.
You can see it in major companies like Apple, for example, where. The cost of R&D has an impact on their bottom line for their shareholders. So any sort of long-term R&D either has to really generate something insane at the end of it or has to get canceled within a few years.
Yeah.
So you don't see new products. You see the same product slightly upgraded year over year.